Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Elaborators. Today on The Elaborators, I'm excited to welcome into the studio, of course, some very beautiful people as well. Producer Simon is with me. G'day, mate.
G'day.
I'm excited to have you with me. What do you plan on doing today?
Listening and learning, hopefully, a lot and being challenged a lot. It's going to be a good episode.
So today we thought we'd talk about, you know, the origins of the planet and start with Genesis chapter 1. So we're going to be elaborating on Genesis chapter 1. And to do that, Stan Ritchie's in the house. How are you, mate?
Hey, hey, hey. I'm here. I'm doing all right.
You are looking particularly well created today, I've got to say.
Yeah, well, that's actually
pretty
the
or
camera.
Pretty actually?
Pretty actually? Actually pretty. I don't know. You are Kenoff. That's all I'm going to say to that.
Oh, there we go. Boo, welcome.
Oh, what are you? It's booing and hissing. That's started.
Not a Barbie man.
You're not a Barbie man?
No.
In a Barbie world? I'm a Barbie girl. And anyway, look,
How did we get to this place?
Because you booed. You booed. All I said was you are Kenoff. I gave you this applause and I was trying to encourage you. I'm talking about
in life in general. How did we get to this place?
We're not starting small here. We've got the creation of everything, and how did we get to this place?
Barbie land of the real world.
Yes, I think there's a fairly clear distinction between a plastic model. Anyway, look, what we thought we might attempt to do.
Those weren't in the show notes.
Not in the show notes. What we thought we'd attempt to do is start at the very beginning, because as Julie Andrews said, that's a very good place to start. And it's the foundation of the whole of our faith. It's the foundation of our descriptions of God. It's the very first verses that we read when we open the scriptures. And believe it or not, Stan Ritchie and producer Simon, they have been known to be controversial words. So I thought we'd start very, very quickly with the idea of what does it mean to actually know that you're a created being? Does that help you in any way from the get-go? Jump in, boys.
Wow,
anytime you're ready. Well, here's the basis of that question, right? So if I have a creator, then I know there's a definitive purpose and a divinity behind it, which actually gives me, I believe, a stronger sense of self and a stronger sense of the makeup of myself being spirit, mind, body, soul. Because again, it's very, very complex to describe all of those things very succinctly and very simply, but
Instagram can do that with quotes, right?
Yeah. With the right filter, we can explain anything.
With three emojis, right?
So we talk about being created in his image. Well, that's what the scripture says.
I mean, there's an intrinsic value in that statement if you accept it and everything. But I think most people will react the opposite direction to that.
Mm.
If I'm a created being, then, I'm responsible to something else or someone else.
Right.
Because they created me. So, and there's the rub. That's why Genesis chapter 1 is controversial.
So let's get into it. This is what it says. In the beginning, God.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah? Done.
There were 3 days now.
In the beginning.
Yeah. In the beginning, God.
Yeah, God.
There is no explanation of where this God came from.
There's no prequel to Genesis chapter 1.
No.
George Lucas would ruin it. But
he was already there. He was there before in the beginning.
Before in the beginning, he was there, and at the end, after the end, before the, yeah. So I have heard very smart people, much smarter than me, describe other dimensions and all that sort of stuff. But the way I read that is the source of everything has a beginning. There is a beginning. And so we read it in Genesis, in the beginning, God, and then created the heavens and the earth. That's the very first verse of everybody's Bible. How does it help you, Stan, to know that that verse is there?
How does it help me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it gives me confidence in the existence of God.
Mm.
I mean, that's the starting place is, if there is no God, then life is meaningless. So, yeah, I like the idea of
God existing before we did, simply because it gives us a relationship outside of the humanity that we live within and are confused by and confronted by every single day. When we look at the world and attempt to bring peace to it in whatever form you're doing that, you know, in parenting, in relationships, in those small ways we're doing it, and noticing that the chaos continues and we can't change it, the idea that there was a God there that existed before me and loves me despite what's going on around me that I don't have control over, but he does, gives me great hope.
Yeah, I can see that. That's certainly the fact that we're not God, that there is something greater and bigger than us is certainly comforting because there's way too many situations I can't control, which is so frustrating.
Between you and producer Simon,
I like to fix things. You know, give me a problem.
Sorry. I heard fix. You heard fix. I heard control. But there again is the rub, right? We're trying to fix, we're trying to control, and the idea of
you're out of control.
Yeah, well, been that way my whole life, baby. It's
that's what
thing.
I love about you. Yes.
But the idea of creation bringing dignity to humanity, the idea of without a created purpose, then there may if there is no purpose, if there is no reason to my existence, then you know, ergo, there is no reason for anybody else's existence. Therefore, I can define someone else's existence as meaningless as well and have no care toward them. So I think the idea that there is equality and dignity within the idea of all people being created in his image.
In his image.
Yeah. Gives me the sense that I am not just responsible for me. I'm responsible for your peace and your well-being as well.
And all of creation.
Yeah.
Because that's what he gave humans the job to do, is to care for creation and each other. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah. So I think there are some essentials. If we're talking about the essentials of your faith, I'm assuming this would be one of those essentials of knowing that you were loved and created by an in-the-beginning God. Would there be other essentials that you'd throw in there?
Oh yeah, there's a few essentials. I think we have to accept that God is the creator, and that's where that defines the difference between an atheist and a believer in any faith. Really, is that we believe that there is a creator, but beyond that, there's a lot to that discussion though about the creator, and I think we get hung up on the how. How did that creation happen? Mm. And we end up dividing and arguing over that. Anyway, so it's essential that God created. The how, maybe not quite so much essential. I have strong views about it.
Sure.
And I'm happy to share those at some point. But it's not that the how isn't the essential. The fact that God created is the essential in that one. The other essentials to me would be the inspiration of Scripture, that the Bible is the Word of God and it came from God, the virgin birth of Christ, the deity of Christ, that Christ was God in the flesh, his substitutionary death for my sins and the sins of the whole world, and his bodily resurrection. Those would be the essentials. And salvation is by grace through faith. Mm. Beyond that, most things are pretty negotiable.
Yeah, and again, it's saying that when we look at Christendom across the world, you will get very, very broad discussions on everything, essentially beyond that, right?
Yeah, well, sadly, even on those things sometimes.
Yeah. But again, I think for the purposes of this podcast, it's important to say on the Elaborators here, that's our starting point. Our starting point are those essentials. Yeah. And if you were to come to our church, which is Werribee Baptist Church, by the way, you would hear teaching that's the foundation of that teaching, that when we teach from the Bible, we believe it's the inspired word of God given to us through the servants of God. But there's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of crazy out there. And I think, you know, again, we are monotheists. We believe in one true God.
In three persons.
In three Gee, we're getting deep quick on the elaborators today. Jump in anytime you're comfy.
They were there. All involved in creation.
Pardon?
They were all involved in creation.
Oh, come on. Now we're getting interesting. Mm. I was going to say the polytheistic sort of view of the world is all the gods are at war with each other all the time, and that chaos is represented on Earth, and that's why there's – but the idea that the whole fight of creation is for power, you know, and we see that represented in humanity where we see powers fighting against other powers, and we say, no, it's not a pantheon of gods. It's one God who actually brings unity to his creation, to his humanity, if we could come to this foundational idea that he created us all in his image. And so there's actually great, to me anyway, great peace in understanding that a God of justice is a God of unity. He's not a God of racial division or language division or any other cultural division. He's a God that is saying to his creation, I want to reconcile you unto myself. And so part of our conversation, part of our teaching here is to point people to the one true God. And one way we do that, of course, is we're going to do a series. We're going to do a few teachings through the book of Genesis. You've jumped into this preparation, Stan, yep, to get this first message together that I know you're getting together. What's been the thing that's jumped off the page at you? What's been exciting about unpacking Genesis 1 again?
Well, I was trying to get into the actually creation story and really got bogged down in the beginning God, you know?
Absolutely.
So just the evidence for the existence of God through creation. Mm. Creation screams out that there is a God. So that's jumped off the page. The one of the other things that jumped off for me, which this may not be news to a lot of people, but I think I saw it in a different light. Mm-hmm. When you start looking at the theory of evolution and the origins of that was, or at least the known father of it would have been Charles Darwin.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, he's very famous for his work in that. Was you mentioned a while ago that God is not divisive and, you know, the races and the languages, mm-hmm, and all that kind of thing. The reality is evolution and Darwin's theory of evolution was actually fueled by racism.
Wow.
And or I should say at least racist embraced it, you know, engaged with it very heartily. The book that he wrote, The Origin of Species, that's, mm-hmm, what's commonly known.
Yep.
Well, the original title of that book, and you can go to Amazon.com and you can look this up right now. You can buy a copy of this book. The title of the book is On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, mm-hmm, or The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life.
That puts a slightly different spin on it, doesn't it?
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. And that kind of blew me away. Interesting, as I was beginning to think through all this, we went away a couple of weeks ago for our anniversary and spent some time in the city. One of the places we went to was the Immigration Museum here in Melbourne, Australia.
Yeah.
And Deanna's wanted to do that for 20 years. So that was like the bucket list.
It took you 20 years to take her on a date that's half an hour away? Well done, you. Well done, you. That's a husband to win.
It's the Immigration Museum, dude.
It doesn't sound. No, I got to say, they could come up with a snazzier title, maybe. I don't know.
But one thing I saw throughout that is when they talked about the different periods where. There's so many things I could talk about.
Yeah.
But periods where they would look at new people coming to Australia. One of the key things was protecting the race, the superior race. The other thing that blew me away, and these are going to sound like they're opposed to each other, but sadly I don't think they were, is the historicity of Christianity in Australia. Mm. They wanted to protect the superior race and the Christian foundations. Yeah. Those were the two elements that came across as I went through the Immigration Museum.
And any social science today would explain to you that where Christianity is actually getting its reinvigoration from is everywhere else in
everywhere
the world.
Everywhere
else. And that's the beautiful thing about God is God moves how God moves. Yeah. And he will show us our own ugliness if we need to see it. But that is certainly an ugly part of our history, this idea that there are peoples that aren't as godly or don't have access to the same God that we, you know. So what I love about that, and you will see this certainly in our city and in our church, is that every, how many nations did we say last time we counted? It was It was more than...
It's over 50.
Over 50. And it's a beautiful thing. Actually, many times after church on a Sunday, I'll be recognizing that my accent is unique in the conversation with people that I'm having. So I actually
Rural Victoria.
Yes, right? Rural. Yeah, I can talk farmer. I can talk farmer. I can drop it down there. Or I can even talk Queenslander if you want. I can go right up there. I've just offended most of my friends. Anyway, but yeah, it's one of those things where if the church does not recognize that the new life it's being given around the world comes from nations other than the ones you may expect, it's going to die itself. But it's okay because God's in control and He builds the church, and that's okay. Jesus builds the church, and that's all good. So we can take great confidence of that. But so you got stuck literally on Genesis chapter 1, not even just verse 1, like half of verse 1.
The first five words.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Yeah. And it goes on to say the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And that's the image that we have. There's what I love getting into some of the science of this. And do you know, this is very, very random, but I do like the idea that 95% of the universe, we don't even know what it's made of. So I thought, we know like 4 to 5%. And I found the word for it.
Could God be in that other 95%?
This is where I love to go with it, because we know visible baryonic matter.
Okay.
Baryonic matter makes up 4 to 5%.
Yep.
Of the known universe. That's I can touch it, I can feel it, I can see it, it reflects light, it has density, all those sort of things. Then there's dark matter, and dark matter takes up around 27% far as we know. We can't actually tell you what dark matter is, but we're pretty sure it's there, and that's what that is. And then there's dark energy. Mm-hmm. And that's the rest of it.
Right.
This is just a bit of fun. Dark matter is a mysterious form of matter that doesn't interact with electromagnetic forces and doesn't emit light. It's estimated to make up 27% of the total mass energy of the kind of the universe, blah, 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 blah. Dark energy is another enigmatic component of the universe, but it's not matter. Are you with me so far? So often when we're talking about the creation that we see, we need to understand how little we actually even see.
Wow.
So it's actually a great encouragement to me that in the beginning,
God,
right?
You're tapping into so much there.
Good. Keep talking. This is the elaborators. Yeah, go. Yeah.
Well, when you consider Earth that we can see, and even the stars, and as limited as that is, our exposure to it, but human existence, plants, life, animals, and just the Earth itself and the seas and the rivers and the mountains, what we can understand about all of that is enormously complex and everything. It's also enormously fragile.
Right.
The fact that they say if the Earth was tilted just 1 degree or something different, then we would all either be frozen or roasted and things like that. And nothing works if there's any variation at all from what is there. So honestly, when you start thinking about the 4 or 5% that we can see, that's the inhabitable 4 or 5% that God has set there for us.
Mm.
When he created us in an environment, the only environment in the universe, as vast as it can be and as much as we can study and see, we're the only inhabitable place. And it's just so intricate the way that works that, to me, it screams creation.
I think, and again, I'm sure listeners will say, well, you guys are biased, you're both pastors in a church and all the rest of it. And I think, yes, we are. Well, is it biased to say the testimony that I've seen of people throughout my life, the testimony I've seen of God at work in people's lives, is not just an academic exercise. It's something that we've seen replicated over and over in our local neighborhood and around the world. So the existence of God interacting with His creation, I think I'm unmovable on that.
Right. And that is that's really the bottom line. But a lot of people just heard you say that, and they're interpreting that differently than what you just said.
Okay, how are they interpreting
it? A lot of people just heard you say that you believe in a 6 literal 24-hour day creation account, and the earth is only 4,000 to 6,000 years old. That's what people just heard you say.
Because I said God interacts with His creation?
Mm-hmm. Mm. But because, yeah, you basically saying you are a creationist. You believe that God created.
Absolutely.
That's where people, and the fact that we're biased, those statements, that people are interpreting that, generally speaking, that way.
Hmm.
But theologians actually have a variety of views about this.
Yeah, and I don't, I think I've shared with you before, I don't particularly, I've never had to come to a complete conclusion. So I was taught as a kid, God created the earth, and that's the way it reads in my Bible. Yep. But I've also understood that if I wanted to get into it, there's multiple views. Mm-hmm. The young earth creationism, which is the one.
That's the six literal 24.
We just talked about. Yep. Old earth creationism.
Yeah, that's a little bit different. It's actually a lot of bit different. It's that we look at nature and we look at scripture, and they have to align.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any contradiction, then clearly
one of them's wrong.
One of them's, well, they can't be, though. They both have to be. But the old earth or progressive creationism believes that over millions or billions of years, God occasionally stepped in and created things. It's different than theistic evolution, or that God did the Big Bang and then he hands off.
Mm-hmm.
It's that over time, millions and billions of years, God has created. It's all been miraculous. Each time, every now and then, he says, okay, we need some emu, or whatever. So he just does.
Sorry. Okay. I love the way Americans say emu. That's my favorite thing about this podcast now.
Yeah. That's the snippet right there.
So we have emus here. Stan, what do we have?
You have what?
Emus.
Ostriches.
You have to say emu again.
Emu.
There it is.
Emu.
An emu is just an emu that wears a lot of black clothing and white face.
Didn't we just say the same thing?
Australians would spell it E-M-E-W. Emu.
Emu.
Emu. Like a cow.
Emu.
Emu.
Like no, that'd be emu.
Yeah.
You say like a emu. My point is that there was an emu.
That's got nothing to do with anything.
All right, anyway, back to the billions. But
on the older... On the old earth creationism.
Yeah.
All right. They actually do believe that humans were miraculously created.
Okay.
They don't believe that we evolved from something else, although there was a lot of creatures that might have been similar, but we didn't come from those. The biggest problem with that old earth idea is that they believe that animals died, death and decay were existing in the world before Adam.
Right. So your question would be,
what about Romans chapter 5, verse 12 that says that through one man, sin entered the world and death by sin?
Yeah. So death and decay are a direct result, by the way, sin. We understand it, by the way, of sin, which didn't happen without Adam. How did death and decay happen before Adam? Sin and death and decay didn't happen? Right. So that's old earth creation. Theistic evolution?
Theistic evolution, also known as evolutionary creation, is that God created the earth and life over billions of years, mm-hmm. and the gradual process of evolution was crafted by him and governed by him to create the diversity of what we see. So basically, it was more of a, he used evolution to create.
Yeah. I noticed that you've noted down intelligent design there. I didn't have that in my notes. Mm. Tell me what you discovered in researching that one.
Well, that's interesting, because one of the big things that I've been doing, I know the position I take, and I know that pretty thoroughly.
Well, you're fairly intelligent and well-designed?
No.
You are creative?
That's not the position I take. But what I've been
doing—
you're
not intelligent? Sorry, this is a serious conversation.
What I've been doing is I've been doing not a deep dive, but a mediocre dive into these other views,
mm-hmm.
So that I can speak intelligently to them, because it's easy for me to be up there and give my biased rant on the view that I believe is the only one that makes any sense at all. But I want to give respect and appreciation to people that actually think different than me, that still love Jesus and recognize that they can still follow Jesus without believing the same thing I do. But anyway, the intelligent design, I'm only scratching the surface, but basically it just admits there's clear evidence of a creator, because there's an intelligent designer. So they would take it as we could not be the result of randomness.
Mm.
And the evolutionary theory is built on the fact that we're a result of randomness, and intelligent design says, nah, it's just too complex. The eyeball is too complex to have just happened randomly, much less the rest of the person.
I was doing some research on eyelashes recently. And apparently,
I'll leave that one alone.
And Barbie or?
No, eyelashes. So, why do you have eyelashes? And it's to protect your eyes and all the rest of it. But apparently, if your eyelashes are too short, which can happen, you get more eye infections. And so there you go. So what they were saying is you should wash your eyelashes every day because they're there to stop the pollens and all the things from getting into your eyes.
Shampoo or?
No, I think a face washer and some water would be fine. Yeah. So I think like shampoo in your eyes is what you try to avoid ever since you were a child.
I think that's been very mean to the eyelashes. It's saying, deal with this and then just putting shampoo on them. Like that's the whole job.
Have you ever seen people get their eyelashes tinted? That's a wild process. To anyone that's ever had their eyelashes tinted, my hat goes off to you. I think you're amazing. But the point is that every intricate part of your body is created and has a purpose.
And
it's a pretty wild thing to think of. Another little bit of randomness is that for people who wear contact lenses, the reason you have to take your contact lenses out is because the eyeball actually needs oxygen as well. And so by leaving them in for too long overnight, all that sort of stuff, some of the health of the eye can be affected because it needs the oxygen that it's getting from the outside, and the eyelids do a job to keep the things out, and the eyelashes do a job, and the eyebrows do a job, and it's just phenomenal when you start to break down all the very intricate moments, and that's saying nothing of the cells that we're made up of in the first place.
And I just want to know why you have this much time on your hands.
I don't. My brain retains random information that I then use when I'm being talked to.
You got to blame the algorithms.
Absolutely.
Something popped up in his feed that he thought he'd like about eyelashes.
Yeah. No, well, I do follow there's a fun one called Wired that I follow that has a whole lot of little science-y things. Nice. But there's more theories of creation and how we all came to be. But the point is that we've come to the conclusion that the essential is, in the beginning, God. That's the essential. The how becomes a little bit less essential, although it does genuinely affect your theology going forward from there and your sense of God and how he interacts with his creation in an ongoing day-to-day way. So the idea of the gap theory? That one God just jumps in every now and again and blows something up and something new happens, which I think is basically the Matrix. That's what the Matrix is based on.
I think it's the Eternals, isn't it, in Marvel?
I was going to say every existential movie, yeah. But knowing that we are known is probably what I keep coming back to. Knowing that we are known, knowing that every little, like, you know, what about fingernails? What does my little toe do? All those sort of fun conversations about, without my little toe, I don't balance and I fall over, so I need it there. It's not just the little piggy that went to market. all of these things speak to me. And how do I feel? Why do I feel things? Why do I sense God? Where does that come from? Where does your sense of conscious and all those things? How do you have empathy? This idea that if I'm created and you're created, then I can feel empathy towards you. Otherwise, the survival of the fittest says you're actually in my way. Fundamentally, I don't believe you're in my way. I believe we're supposed to be walking together. Well, you're a pain in the... Anyway, no. I don't have a beep button for what I need to say next.
I do.
You've got a beep button. Stan's thinking of a comeback.
No. I'm thinking of getting back to my prep.
Yeah. So in the beginning, God, you've been a person of faith for a long time. How often have you come back to this, do you reckon, in that walk?
Maybe not often enough, because as we were alluding to earlier, it's when things are beyond my ability to influence, affect, fix, control. For those of us like
if you lead anything in your life, including your family, your children, you've got control.
But when you get to that point where things you know, okay, I can't control this one, then it's in the beginning, God. You know, that's the only thing you have to rest in. And that's sad that that's the times that you actually realize that and it's like, duh, you know, because we should just live in that all the time. And that would create a whole lot less stress in our lives and things and anxiety, because if we just start there all the time, then we know that God's in control and we're not as concerned about what we can or can't influence and things. I'm tailing off.
No, it's all right. I think one of the things that I always like to encourage people with is when you're in moments of stress and anxiety and whatever you can do to practice in the beginning God, because for the most part, us stopping us letting go, us not trying to control, us not trying to fix is actually a big part of the resolution and solution to your own feelings of anxiety and fear. Because again, God didn't give us a spirit of fear, but a love, barren, sound mind. This is not a power struggle that we're in all day, every day. There is a God who is in control. And if you can start, you know, those moments where you're feeling that wind up happening, where anger's maybe winding up, where fear's maybe winding up, where anxiety's winding up, coming back to this point of, that simple prayer that says, you know, show me your glory, let me know your presence. In the beginning, start again with God is actually a really, really important process. So I know I'm getting a little philosophical and a little allegorical with that idea of in the beginning, but the beginning of everything is everything sort of where we're trying to control is we started it. We want to finish it. We want to fix it. I'm in control of it. And the beginning of everything with God is, no, you're not. Let go. Come back to me. Start with me.
It's good.
It's good. So I think that's a pretty good place to start and maybe a pretty good place to end.
Place to stop, yep.
How are you feeling? You feeling encouraged?
Yeah.
Producer Simon's over in the corner there.
My brain's
whirling around. Yeah. Just remember.
And we didn't even really talk about creation.
4 to 5% of the universe,
you know,
we know what it is.
On the first five words.
In the beginning,
the,
God.
The beginning, God. Well, you are on The Elaborators. This has been our first attempt at discussing the very beginning of everything. So we might have another attempt in the coming weeks as well. I'm excited that you got to listen to this episode, and then next week's episode is a heap of fun. We're gonna have a chat to one of the oldest dads we can find to ask about dadness.
Yep,
dadness.
That's a new thing. I've just made that up. You're pretty good at dadding, aren't you?
# dadness.
Oh, my goodness.
No. He's good at dadding. Okay, that being said, everyone, ladies and gentlemen.
Fail.
Okay. 6 seconds. Obligatory wave.